I believe we strive for greatness because we were never meant to be average. It's in our DNA. We ultimately, if you ask people if they want to be great or do great things, everyone says yes. No one ever says, I haven't found anyone says, yeah, I want to be mediocre. Now, whether we take actions to do those things are different, but we all have this desire in our heart and our soul. I think God planted it in our soul to strive for greatness because that's what being human is about.
All right, welcome back or welcome to the Finding Mastery podcast. I'm Michael Gervais. And the idea behind these conversations is to learn from people who are on the path of mastery, to better understand what they're searching for, to understand their psychological framework, which is how they see the world and themselves in it. And we also want to work to understand the mental skills that they use to build and refine their craft. Finding Mastery is brought to you by listening. This is exactly what their app does. It helps you listen to books and content that you might not be able to sit down and actually have the time to read. There was a time early in my career where I remember sitting in the back hallways of my university and being in the library for hours, reading all of the sports psychology literature and research that I could get my hands on. I loved it. I cherished it. The field of sports psychology is just absolutely on a bender right now. It is growing so fast. It is nearly impossible to keep up with all of the research that's coming out. So that's why I love what listening is doing. It's a game changer for me. So the listening app, it lets me listen to anything that's in writing while I'm on the go. Everything from academic papers to books, PDFs, web pages, articles, anything that I put in their app, it reads it to me. It narrates to me. And plus their AI is great. The way that the interface sounds, like, of course, it's not a human that's reading, but it kind of, the AI is so good of what they're doing, it just works. And then there's also this note-taking function. They know that people like us like to take notes. And so it's as simple as when I hear a key idea, I instantly press a button and that section is saved. They've done a really nice job with this product and they've got a great offer for us. Usually they only give a 2-week trial, but because you are listening to Finding Mastery, you get a whole month for free. Check that out, a whole month for free. So I want to encourage you to go check it out, listening.com/findingmastery, or use the code findingmastery at checkout to get started. Again, it's listening.com/findingmastery, or use the code findingmastery at checkout to get 1 month completely free. Finding Mastery is brought to you by Hims. Hims is changing men's healthcare by providing simple, convenient, and affordable access to science-informed treatments for erectile dysfunction, known as ED. They also are servicing hair loss, weight loss, and more. Health struggles like ED, they're common, but they can be hard to talk about when it comes to finding a solution. That's why Hims has been a game changer for so many men. The entire process is 100% online. Answer a series of questions on their site, and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option for you. If prescribed, your medication ships directly to you for free in a discreet package. No waiting rooms, no pharmacy visits, and no insurance is needed. Plus, you can manage your plan directly on the Hims app. You can track progress and learn more about your conditions and how to treat them from leading medical experts. If you or a loved one has been struggling with ED, I really want to encourage you to go check out Hims. I know ED often has a psychological component to it as well. So be sure that you're stacking some psychological best practices into your daily routine. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/findingmastery. That's hims.com/findingmastery for your personalized ED treatment options. hims.com/findingmastery. Disclaimer, hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies based on product and subscription plan. Now, here's a quick little note. Recently, I was interviewed by Tim Ferriss on his new TV show called Fearless. And the episode, it's an hour-long episode. It airs on June 27th at 8 p.m. both Eastern and Pacific time. And it's on the Audience Network. So if you have DirecTV, it's channel 239. And then if you have AT&TU, you can find it on those channels as well. We talked about the mechanics of confidence, ways to build capacity, psychological capacity. specific thoughts on how to explore potential and how people in high-stakes environments work with fear. And I'd love for our group, the Finding Mastery Tribe, to surprise the network with an outstanding showing. And, you know, it'd be phenomenal if you ask a handful of your friends to do the same. Now, this conversation is with John Gordon. John has been on the podcast before, and in that conversation, we talked about his process of writing because he's written so many books. In this conversation, it's a little bit different. We get into his new book and the mechanics of his findings around that. So John is a best-selling author, and here's a list of his books. It's phenomenal. The Energy Bus, The Carpenter, Training Camp, The Seed, You Win from the Locker Room, No Complaining Rule, and his newest book is The Power of Positive Leadership. So just as a quick little bio, he's been featured on the Today Show, CNN, CNBC, The Golf Channel, Fox, and the list goes on and on. And it seems like every other time I turn around or I hear him speaking somewhere, you know, he's in a locker room somewhere in the NBA or the NFL or Major League Baseball, and, you know, he's keynoting conferences all the time. So John's just got a great spirit about him. And I think people are so attracted to him because of that spirit, and you just can't help but to want to be better around him. And I hope that jumps out in this conversation, his authenticity and his true deep interest in improvement. John also has a tradition in sport as well. He played lacrosse and was a graduate at Cornell University, and he also holds a master's degree in teaching from Emory. So he's got a rich point of view about being an athlete, being a writer, and also how to communicate those. And the main themes for this conversation, it's about connection, it's about relationships, it's about leading and striving on how to succeed as a team. And that's really where the focus is here. So with that, let's jump right into this conversation with John Gordon. John, how you doing?
Doing great, Mike. How are you?
Yeah, fantastic. I think this is the first time that I've had a guest on for a second time. And so I just want to catch up with you. I want to find out what's been new in your life. And you've made such an influence on me and people that have called in afterwards or emailed afterwards saying that, God, what John stands for and what he's done in his life, it's fantastic. And so I'm excited to have this second conversation with you.
Me too, Mike. Yeah, we really delved into a lot of my past history, but I thought would love to share, you know, more about the work that you do, I do, and what it really means to build a great team, leadership. So I'm excited about really talking about that today.
Is that where you spent most of your energy lately, is about team and building team?
Very much so. It seems to be my niche now where people are bringing me in to help them build their leadership team, or leaders are bringing me in to help them build their team. And it wasn't something that I pursued. It was just something that happened, I guess, writing the book with Mike Smith, You Win in the Locker Room First. But also I really feel like I have a good gist on what it takes to really build a great team. And everyone's looking to do that. So I've been called by coaches, and even churches lately have brought me in to help them develop their leadership team and help them become a stronger team. So it's been interesting. It wasn't something I expected to do.
And then what are the core principles that you're working from?
The core principles for me are connection and commitment and caring. And the idea that a great team has both love and accountability. So you need to have love where you really love each other, but you must also have accountability where you're helping each other get better. I had a coach tell me that they had become a great family because they loved each other, but they didn't push each other. They didn't challenge each other. They didn't make each other better. They were almost covering for each other, making excuses for one another because they didn't want to like challenge what each other was doing and the wrong things they were doing. So he said, we were a great family, John, but we weren't a great team. But then we worked at becoming a great team where we held each other accountable. So then they had the love and accountability, won 20 straight games and had an incredible, you know, season. So, and also in talking to various leaders, I recognize that's the key to leadership, right? So instead of tough love, I call it, you know, love tough, that if you love each other, you will push each other and challenge each other to get better. And then this idea of connection that you know, you really have to be a connected team to be a committed team. There's a lot of great speakers out there, a lot of great guys with Navy SEALs and so forth that are doing incredible work talking about their experience. And they talk about, you know, laying down their lives for one another and jumping on, you know, a grenade and service and sacrifice. But when I think about that, I recognize that you will never have that kind of commitment unless you have the connection that breeds commitment.
And then, okay, so connection, commitment, caring, and you put accountability in there somewhere.
Yeah, to me, accountability goes under caring. So, so for me, it's because I care about you, I will push you and I will challenge you to be your best. Because I love you, I won't let you settle for anything less. Like Buzz Williams is a great example of this. I've worked with Buzz for a while now and talked to Buzz quite often. And his whole thing is about love. But because he loves you and really earns the right to challenge you, he's now pushing you to go beyond what you would do on your own. And he's earned the right to do that, so they actually let him. That's the key to his success. I've analyzed it. That's the ultimate key. And Dabo Swinney as well. I work with Clemson now for 5 years. And, man, he loves his players, but he will push you and challenge you to get better.
Okay, so Buzz is the men's basketball coach at Virginia Tech, right?
Yeah, yes.
Okay, and then you said that the key to his success is that
His key to success is that his players allow him to push them because he loves them so much. So he really spends a lot of time on the personal relationship side of things. I mean, a lot. And really, and it's not just so they'll win. It's just who he is.
So how does he do that? Like what have you observed and learned that he is able to, and how does he invest in the personal side?
Right, on the personal side, it's barbecues at his house. I mean, just with the team, just he and his team. It's inviting guys over his house, spending time with him and his family. It's one-on-one, deep and meaningful conversations. It's life coaching. They call him a life coach as much as he's a coach. So he's always investing in their personal relationships. He's also investing in their personal growth. He brings in a money manager to talk about money. He'll also even teach them how to manage money and how to work a checkbook. So he goes through like all the aspects of life and the skills they'll need for their life, and he's investing in that. He's investing in them on a very deep personal level where it's hard to quantify. It's hard to explain how someone does that, but just like a dad would. My dad would take the time to love me. Let me give you an example. I had a biological father who left when I was one. I was raised by, my dad. I'll call him my stepfather, although I hate that term. He was a New York City police officer. And when he first married my mom, I'll never forget, he said, I'm going to treat you like my own, and I want you to call me dad. Brings tears to my eyes thinking about it, because like he was saying, like, I'm going to love you like my own, and I want you to call me dad. And I did. And he committed to me and loved me like his own throughout my life. Well, he just passed away in June. My biological father is still alive, but I never felt his love and his commitment. I never felt that sacrifice. But my dad who raised me, I mean, he was committed. He loved me. And so when I think about those two people in my life, it's clear to me like that one was a coach and a father figure who invested in me and loved me. The other one wouldn't serve or sacrifice or go out of his way for me. So I never truly felt his love. So for me, there's no commitment back to him. It's hard to have commitment. Now we have an okay relationship and, but it's never been anything special and never will be. But my dad, I mean, like it's like I would do anything for him to honor his legacy. Does that make sense?
Yeah, for sure. If you think of your dad like a coach, you had one coach that was connected, he was committed and he cared and held great accountability for you. And made sacrifice along the way so that in return you would do whatever. And then if your biological dad was analogous of a coach, you didn't feel connected, you didn't have the commitment, and it was hard to be accountable to his legacy or to him as a man. It sounds like what I'm hearing.
Yes, very much so. So when you have a coach that invests in you and you feel their commitment, I would say as a player, as a person, you want to really have that desire to commit, that desire to go above and beyond, to be your best. When you feel someone commitment, you will be more committed to them.
Okay. So we talk about it all the time. This is not an unfamiliar word, the importance of being committed to explore potential, to go back to get the results that you want, whatever it is, whether it's the micro tactical goal setting of getting said result, or it's something where I'm going to push onto the frontier. That commitment is really important, especially commitment during difficult times. But what you're saying is it starts with a commitment from a loved one, and then you commit back to that loved one, and that loved one is somebody that is wanting to see growth for you. So it's you're suggesting that it starts with the commitment of a coach or maybe even a teammate, and then over time that commitment grows in such a way that you'll do whatever it takes to commit back to that person. Now, what about the commitment to oneself? Like how do those Venn diagrams, if you will, lay over top of each other?
Right. That's a great example. I think first and foremost, you must commit to yourself to be in the best version of yourself, to be in the best that you can be.
Yeah, I'm glad you came to that. I'm glad you said that first, because I was going to get confused about where the commitment starts. Okay, so you're saying it starts with the person. You got to commit to yourself for whatever it is. And then,
you know, as you commit to yourself and be the best you can be, I'm convinced that part of being the best you can be is actually being a great teammate to others. Mm-hmm. You know, so for instance, I was talking to, you know, a guy in special forces. He said, we have these, you know, Navy SEALs, and then we have Team SEAL 6, right? I know you know this world, you know, you're very much more familiar with this world than I am. And he said that the Navy SEALs have to try out to be members of Team SEAL 6. So you have the elite that's trying out to be the elite of the elite. And as they're going through their missions and simulations and so forth, they're looking for certain characteristics. So I asked them what they're looking for. He said, well, if they don't meet those characteristics, we say, hey, thank you so much. You're just not the right fit. He told me what they're looking for is not just a high performer, but someone who is at the performing at the highest level. But while they're performing at the highest level, they're also making the people around them better. You would call them a dominant competitor, right? Or a transformational teammate. And so to me, it's about, yes, you have to commit yourself to being your best so you can perform at the highest level for you. But it's also about when you're helping others get better, you get better in the process. When you help others improve, you improve. When you help others grow, you grow. I mean, there's the great story about Schwen Nader. Schwen Nader was recruited by John Wooden, 6'10", played at Cypress Community College. John Wooden said, hey, Schwen, I want you to come to UCLA, but if you come here, you're not going to play much because we have the best center in the world in Bill Walton. But we want you to help make Bill Walton better and practice against Bill Walton in practice. So every day, Schwen Nader's battling Bill Walton in practice. Never starts a college game, but he's the only person in NBA history never to have started a college game but be drafted in the first round of the NBA. 12-year NBA career, rookie of the year.
Talk so about sharpening your sword. I mean, yes. That really is, you know, sharpening your sword. When no yes. one's looking, there's no glory, there's no fame in it, which is just that stuff of like, I don't know, I want to say of like great women and great men are able to just really do the work. And then yes. the reward pays out afterwards. It's like, God bless it. Like, that's yeah. amazing.
It is. And so he's like challenging Bill Walton to improve. And at the same time, he's improving, getting better. Now, I spoke to the Miami Heat this year before the season, and Pat Riley was there and got a chance to talk to him. And he told me a similar story. When he went, you know, to be with the Lakers, coach told him that, listen, if you don't come in the best shape of your life, you will not make this team because I need you to be a great practice player to come here and make these guys better. That was his only job, to come in great shape, to be a monster.
What's happening right now? Like, what's happening? Something's different. Are you sussing that out or sensing that? Like, there is something different that's taking place right now for the new generation of athletes.
When you say that, what do you mean? Is there a little more entitlement, less, more focus on self, less focus on team?
We'll say to people, like, you got to come in the greatest shape of your life. And I think it glosses over 50%. And the other 50% are like, that's right. I do. And I'm making that number up completely because I haven't done, there's zero analysis. This is just kind of conversational gut feel stuff. But the 50%, they're already at the elite. And then you say, come in the greatest shape. And they don't. That is mind-boggling to me.
Yeah, I think again, I think they need to hear stories like Schwenator. I think they need to understand that Parolli showed up, and every day in practice, he's challenging Jerry West and Elgin Baylor in practice. The guy's never playing in a game at the time. And those guys, he told me, were mad at him, because here he is every day in practice, foaming at the mouth, challenging them because he was fresh. They had played the night before. They were exhausted. Like, Pat, chill out. But he knows if he doesn't do that, he's going to actually get cut. So his job is to make them better. Well, interestingly enough, he starts to improve. Then he gets put into the rotation on defense to shut their guys down. And then he starts playing more and more. If he doesn't do that in that moment, if he's not the guy willing to be a great practice player to make his guys better, we don't get Pat Riley, the Hall of Famer, the Hall of Fame coach, and now, you know, the guy who runs the Miami Heat. You don't get that guy if you don't have the guy who's willing to do whatever it takes to do the work. So I think maybe the younger people today, there's a lot of noise out there about grinding, right? Do the work and grind. But maybe it's just a lot of words right now. Maybe we need to give them more examples.
When you speak to influential performers, people that have, you know, done the hard work, that are not just freaks of nature and talent. I think you and I are both attracted to not the guy or the gal that's supposed to be a world record holder, but the ones that are and were not expected. And it's because they've unlocked their talent and they've pushed beyond, right? Okay. So what questions do you ask them? And that, like, I'm curious about that, because I think that's going to reveal what it is that you're most interested in and the principles that you're operating from. But, like, if we could just start on the simple, like, what are the questions that you tend to ask these people the most?
Well, Chase Utley was there at the Dodgers when I spoke.
Explain for some folks that don't know.
Chase Utley is a second baseman, played for years, I believe, with the Phillies. Now he's with the Dodgers, long time, incredible baseball player. Just a guy who's had a lot of longevity, a lot of success. And he's now, again, a second baseman with the Los Angeles Dodgers. Anything you would add to that, Mike?
No, he's a stud.
Okay.
Yeah, he's a stud. Second
baseman. He's a stud. Yeah, a stud. And so I asked him, I said, you know, I said, I just talked to the team about being a craftsman instead of a carpenter, you know, really focusing your craft. I said, I got to be honest, when I think of craftsmen, I think of you. You've had this success over the years. What's your secret? And you know what he said? He's like, you know, for me, it's really no secret. I said, you're just trying to get better every day? He said, yep. He said, every day, I'm just showing up and trying to get better. I think we try to complicate things, but
I think I love that statement that we try to complicate it. And then because I was going to ask you, like, how does he do it? You know, like, maybe you guys didn't get into it, but just showing up is, I think that's, I don't know, maybe 50% of the work. Like, you just got to show up, but then showing up with low focus, showing up with just leaving everything up to the team or everything up to the coach to show you how to get better is not going to really work in the long run. You know, like that level of surrender is not going to do it. So did he give you any indications, or if it wasn't from Chase, other folks that themes that you've seen emerge from people?
Yeah. I mean, I watched him. So I was actually watching him working on his bunts. I mean, and very intentional. It wasn't like he was just going through the motions. Another guy you see laughing and, you know, chilling out while he's doing his routine. But there was Chase working on his bunts. And then I was watching him in the field and very intentional in his warmups and just going through fielding practice. So there was a little like a high level intensity while he was going through it. And so I think Bill Parcells said it best. You know, when he was talking to Curtis Martin, I saw this story on TV and he said, you know, hey, kid, you got a great routine. But remember, there's a difference between a routine and a commitment to your routine. There's a difference between, you know, a routine and devotion and commitment. And I think it's about how you go through it. Damian Lillard and I spoke after his rookie season. And again, this is nothing private, so I'm not speaking out of tune, but he wrote me a nice quote for training camp, because he said he read my book twice to remind himself how hard he would have to work to make it in the NBA. He was at one level, but he knew he had to work even harder and practice more. So that meant more time at the gym. It meant being more intentional in his workout routine. I think people talk about Kobe Bryant, they think they understand that he had a great workout routine, but I think if they really spend time with him, I had a good friend who, you know, spent time during that and said, you got to see it. You got to be there to truly understand how grueling.
Yeah, 1,000%. It's different. Yeah. Those rare individuals focus at a more intense level and are more committed to the moment than I think most people appreciate. And it is, it's almost intimidating.
That he said that. He said it's intimidating to see it, but there's an intense, there's a focus, there's a drive, and it's happening in practice. I think Steph Curry is a great example of that now, right? The kind of routine he has, the way he goes about it, you see that. And again, it's a little subtle difference, but if you're watching players, I would actually, you know, if I'm looking to draft someone, I would be willing to look and see, you know, how hard they work. How are they willing to work? What does their routine look like in terms of their commitment? But I wouldn't look at the routine because I would look at the intention behind the routine. That's where it comes from. Like, where's the heart at? You know, there's got to be heart power behind it. There's got to be a heart connection to even have be a great team. I say, you know, you could try to connect all you want. You can do it because the book says it or check the box. But if it doesn't come from your heart, it's not going to be real. Right now, there's a whole movement in the NBA because there's a study that came out that said that the championship teams always have the most physical contact, high fives, bumps, and hugs. Mm-hmm. So I was speaking to one of the teams and I said, all right, guys, everyone's starting to measure this now. And every coach is trying to encourage their players to have more physical contact. So now we're going to have all these teams competing to see who can high five each other more, who can give more hugs and fist bumps. But it's not the fist bumps. It's not the hugs. Those are just a byproduct of the heart connection that makes you want a fist bump, that makes you hug, that makes you have the physical contact. So we're measuring the high five, but it's not the high five. It's the connection that we should be measuring that you ultimately can't, but that's what leads to the physical contact.
Yeah. And you'll see volleyball, female volleyball, women's volleyball is they were onto this a long time ago. And after every play, you know, score or not score, they'd come in and hug at the center. And men are doing the same thing now. And it this pendulum swung too far at some point where they're coming in and they were hugging, but they were pissed. Or they're hugging and they really were just like, God, I just, you know, annoyed. So it's like the intent, you're spot on, that the purpose of it, you know, of the routine needs to be really clear, that it's either a clearing mechanism, it's a regrouping mechanism, it's a refocusing mechanism, it's a way to recommit to people, whatever. It might be a moment for a breath. It might be a moment for eye contact, like whatever those moments are, that the intent behind it is the driver. Okay, I want to talk to you about a new sponsor right here, Hydro. I love what they're doing. They are awesome. I don't know if you're into rowing like I am. I really enjoy it. What I try to do is I try to move around different cardio exercises. Sometimes on a bike, sometimes I'm rowing, sometimes I'm outside. But when I want to row, they've got it dialed in. They've done something fundamentally different than all the other rowers. One, it's not this loud machine that is making a ton of noise and, you know, chains slapping all over the place. They've done this in a really slick, premium, elevated way. And then the other thing they've done is that there's a nice screen that you can have a guide or a coach with you. And their coaches are Olympians and world-class athletes. And what they've done is they're filming, full stop, they are filming all over the world on places where their experts are rowing, and then you get to go with them. And they're coaching you the whole way. I love it. My favorite coach by far is Mac. She's great. And I just want to encourage you to give them a shot. If you love rowing, I think you're going to love this machine. And if you're not into rowing, I don't know if you know this, but rowing, there's been some research around rowing that rowing engages over 80% of your muscles while you're doing it. So it's a really efficient exercise. This spring, join the growing rowing community at Hydro. Head over to hydro.com and use the code MASTERY to save up to $400 off your Hydro. That's hydro.com, HYDROW.com, and use the code MASTERY to save up to $400. Hydro.com, use the code MASTERY. Finding Mastery is brought to you by AG1. It's really important to me that the supplements I take are of the highest quality. And that's why for almost a decade now, I've been drinking AG1. When I first was connected with them, I thought, oh, this is great. This is great. And then I double-clicked to understand their process and how they went about it. And I just love the rigor that goes into what they're creating and the product that they have. And they've gone through so many iterations to get it just right, 52 of them to be exact. Sometimes quality can be a buzzword, but they are committed. They are fundamentally committed to have a great product for us. They're interested in absorption. They're interested in high quality manufacturing. They rigorously test their product. So I trust what's in AG1. And one of the reasons I have extra confidence in that statement is they are NSF certified for sport. That's one of the most rigorous independent quality and safety certification programs in the supplement industry. They've made it so easy as well. What I do every morning is I take a scoop, put it into a cup of water, shake it up, and it's the first thing that I put in my stomach. And I love it. It just gives me the sense like, okay, I've invested in my health and I haven't even started my day yet. So if you want to replace your multivitamin and more, I want to encourage you to go check out AG1. So try AG1 and get a free 1-year supply of vitamin D3, K2, and 5 free AG1 travel packs with your first subscription at drinkag1.com/findingmastery. Again, that's drinkag1.com/findingmastery. I hope you will check them out. Okay, so you represent to me a intelligent person in the world that is coming from the heart and really is interested in doing and sharing good in the world. Like, that's who you represent to me. And so I know that that's the lens, well, I would imagine that that's the lens that you see the world through as well, like wanting good, to do good, to help people grow. And there's another side, which is I've seen awful teammates, awful, the worst you can imagine. And that team wins.
Yes.
And I've seen teams that like they can't wait to not be around each other and they're wildly successful. So there is the other side where you don't have to love each other. You don't even have to like each other. You don't even have to be a good human being to get great results. And that's not just in sport. That's in, you know, Wall Street. That's in venture capital. That's in entrepreneurship. That's in business leadership, whatever. How do you work with that realization or that awareness that that is also a fact?
I think about that all the time. It's mm-hmm. funny that you would say that. And I'm glad you brought it up because I do try to think about the other side of the coin. Like when you look at a Kobe who is so driven, sometimes he might alienate his teammates. Or you look at Michael Jordan, who I've never met, but you know, people talk about obviously being the best ever. Or they say Jerry Rice was, you know, driven by fear a lot of times. But what I think about guys like that is, first, from an individual performance level, they say fear was the great motivator, but I don't buy it. I believe the motivator to be great, the motivation to compete was the true driver. It wasn't the fear. I believe ultimately you can't be great out of fear in the long run. So I really believe that there was a love of competing that was actually greater than the fear of failing. Would you agree with that?
I don't know. I'm trying to suss it out because I can – the fear of failing, of looking bad, of whatever, all of those primary drivers, the fear of letting people down can be so anxious, create such an anxious state that yep. you'll do whatever work it takes to reduce that fear. And I've seen many of the greats do exactly that, is that they feel so unsettled within that they just outwork so that they can get some temporary relief from it. And then on the other side, which is like there's people that are truly inspired and they want to be connected and they want to connect and they want to do the work because it's meaningful to them for different reasons. It's a way to honor their parents. Mm. It's a way to honor their God. It's a way to honor whatever. And it's not fear-based at all.
But there's still fear. See, my lens is that it's not either or. I think it's both. For me, because I can look at my own life, right? Fear has been a powerful motivator in my life because I don't want to fail. And when I get on stage, I do not want to fail. Every time I get on stage to speak, it reminds me of playing lacrosse back at, you know, Cornell University, where I'm in front of the big crowd and I'm the face-off guy. And whether we, you know, win or lose is largely dictated often by how well I can do in the face-offs. I mean, there's a lot of other factors, but I have a big factor as the face-off guy. And so it goes back to those moments of wanting to succeed, not wanting to fail. And that was a driver my whole life. I think maybe in some ways my, you know, biological father leave, and I've done some work on this, and I believe that, you know, people who have abandonment issues tend to, you know, want to prove them wrong. But at some point, I believe that fear, even though it works as a stick shift, it's like a stick shift that accelerates you, must give way to a greater power of love to rise to another level. So now, for instance, like whenever I'm giving my best talk, it's not out of fear, it's out of love. When I'm running my best work, it's out of love, not fear. So the fear, there's still fear there. So it's still part of the duality of our existence, right? We're never gonna not have fear. We're gonna have both. But I believe it must give way to something greater. So the love of competition kicks in, and then you're in that moment of competing. So it looks like it's the fear, but I think there's a greater driver is what I'm saying. I think it's both, but I think it gives way to the greater driver. So I've thought about this a lot. Now, teams that hate each other or don't like each other. I talked to Mo Cheeks when I was with OKC, and Mo said, you know, when he was with the Sixers and they won the championship, they would go out to dinner, you know, after the games. They go to a diner. He said, we didn't do it to team build. We did it because we liked each other and we just wanted to hang out together. And that was the best team he's ever been on was that year. Now, I agree that you can have success on a team where they don't like each other. But I don't believe it's sustaining. It's not sustaining. Over time, the bitterness, the jealousy, the envy, and those relationships that aren't strong will eventually crumble. So teams that are not connected, I believe, eventually crumble. They might be strong for a year. You might have a great coach that leads out of fear. He'll win a championship maybe for a year, but it's not going to last. And you can look throughout history to see that it doesn't last over time.
Yeah, I'm nodding my head to what you're saying, is that it can create that maniacal work ethic.
Yes.
And you'll get some results. But eventually, once those results are had or they don't have, things start to pull apart at the seams. You know, and I do think that the yin and yang between, you know, straining and letting go or fear and love, that those two do need to, there is an interplay between the two. And the more that we can free ourselves from, you know, striving and straining alone, because I don't think that we love I heard you say this, but I want to push back a little bit. I don't think that we love competition. I think that we love the way that it feels to grow. Mm. And some people love the way it feels to be relieved that they were enough. And then so competition becomes the mechanism for it. And so I'm not
powerful. Powerful. I love that.
Yeah, I'm not sure that like I love everything competition stands for. Straining and striving together to pursue and to seek our very best together. Like I absolutely love the concept, but I don't think that alone the competition is enough. I think that it's the experience of recognizing growth, and that with that comes the intensity of focusing all of one's attention in the present moment. And that in and of itself is transformational. And then when you pull that out of a straining and striving, the full attention to be fully in the present moment, then you can relieve that sense of fear and experience joy and peace. And that in and of itself is completely transformational. Mm. So it's like, for me, it feels like it's a delivery mechanism to get to those two other things.
And it's like we're always having to challenge ourselves for some reasons. Like we want to challenge ourselves to put ourselves in those situations to grow. You know, there are times I'm on vacation and then someone will say, hey, can you come speak to my team? And I'll go do it. And I'm like, why am I doing that? I want to relax. And yet I find myself being drawn to the challenge to go do it. Probably because there's a sense of feeling in the zone when you're doing it. You're fully engaged. Like you said, you're getting a feeling from it. And it's something that we seek out, but also an opportunity to, you know, help others, make a difference. And when you do that, that feels great too. Like when I'm not helping people, I got to say, when I'm not doing the work that I do and I'm not making a difference, I actually feel a little lost. I love helping people.
So I ask this question, I ask this question to coaches and athletes all the time. And so I'd love to ask it to you. It's not an easy question. And
yeah,
you know, so before I ask it, are you game?
Okay, I'm ready.
Yeah. So what, who are you without what you do? And it sounds like, oh, well, I can answer that. But really, if you really entertain that you could no longer speak publicly, or you couldn't write, or you couldn't make an influence out of enthusiasm and love and wanting good for people, and to do it on a wonderful large stage that you're doing it from.
Yeah.
What happens?
That's a great question. It's like that that movie, I Heart Huckabees, where he says, who are you behind the story? Like, who are you behind the mask? And I would say I'm the same. I actually have not changed at all. So I would go back to, you know, who I was in college, who I was as, you know, growing up. But even growing up, I mean, I was a competitor, always playing sports on the block. So I would still be the person who was probably looking for some challenge to compete with, but it may not be what I'm doing now, but I would still be looking to compete, to push myself to a higher level and to grow spiritually. So I thought about this often. If all this was taken away tomorrow, I would still be okay with who I am, because it wasn't like this has been happening a long time for me.
Yeah, I completely believe that for you, is that if you lost your vocal cords and then lost your ability to, you know, formulate sentences on a typewriter, like whatever, I don't even know how that could actually work, that you would still be in the same person, but you just transmute into some different effort. Now, underlying that, so you are a great competitor, and underlying that insight, why are you competing so hard?
Right.
Because you're on a spiritual journey, probably more than you are financial or whatever, like, right? Like, you're on a spiritual journey. So what is that about for you?
Right. Well, it's not as much competition now. It's not like I'm competing against anyone else, because I like look at other people like a Ken Blanchard or a Pat Lencioni, Five Dysfunctions of a Team. See, here I am talking about his great book. I love Pat, and I've learned so much from Pat. He's, you know, 5 years older than me, and he's someone I say, okay, doing amazing work. So I don't compete against guys like that. I think I'm competing in a sense, committing to trying to be the best that I can be. See, I believe we strive for greatness. I wrote an article the other day, The Four Stages of Greatness. I believe we strive for greatness because we were never meant to be average. It's in our DNA. We ultimately, if you ask people if they want to be great or do great things, everyone says yes. No one ever says, I haven't found anyone says, yeah, I want to be mediocre. Now, whether we take actions to do those things are different, but we all have this desire in our heart and our soul. I think God planted it in our soul to strive for greatness, because that's what being human is about. It's about elevating. It's about innovating. You have a car, and then another company wants to come along and then create Tesla. You know, and there's this drive to succeed. We get to the moon, and now we're looking for Mars. We, as a musician creates a hit song, what do they want to do? They want to create another hit song. Unless you're Vanilla Ice, then you're okay with the one song. I'm kidding, of course. But there's this drive to always push the envelope. We see how movies have evolved. We see how athletes have evolved. What is this about, Mike, right? Why is that? And I'm convinced that there's just part of a human desire to continue to push the envelope, to push the boundaries, to grow. So I would say I'm doing it because that's who I am, and it's also because it's in my soul. And I think that's why you're interested in always pushing the envelope, and so is just about every other person striving for greatness.
And then I wonder, this is something that I don't know if you've unlocked in any way, but I always wonder this concept of potential, is that it becomes problematic in one way, because it's a definition, like, what is it? What is a man or woman's potential? Mm. And how do you really suss that thing out? Because it's a very much a moving ceiling. So there's a challenge with the word potential. And if we're straining and striving and competing and working to get on the edge and, you know, literally working as hard as we can to grow, what are we growing towards? To be more still and more joyful and peaceful, which is available right frickin' now. I don't need to do any... Now, I need to work to train my mind to be here more often, which is the duality and the complication between being and becoming, which is a whole different conversation.
Yes, very right? much so.
So the becoming part is the competitive part. The being part is available right now. But if you haven't trained your mind, it's hard to be here now, and hard to be here now over and over and over again. So then when we talk about potential, we lay that layer on it. What is it that you feel like we are working so hard toward? You say greatness, right? Like, but how do you think about greatness as it relates to potential?
You are really challenging me to go another level with this thinking, so I appreciate it.
And I don't expect you, John, to know the answers. This is just two guys trying to sort out something, and I know that we think a lot of the same things. So yeah, I don't expect you to have an answer by any means, but I know you have a thought about it.
Yeah, no, I love it. Because here's the deal. If we are just in the being state all the time and we're just meditating and or praying like a monk. And there are people that do that. But if we would just do that day in and day out by ourselves and just sitting there and meditating and praying, then we really wouldn't interact with others. We wouldn't go and try to feed the homeless and serve.
Okay, so that to me feels like a beginner's being. Not a problem in it, and I don't even like the word beginner, but it's like that's a beginning stage, which is I need to just be in a quiet room or on the mountaintop by myself to get clarity, to get connected, to be. And then, but eventually, as we train our minds, then we can be while we're eating. We can be while we're talking. We can be while we're working. We can be, you know, in rugged environments. And so that's how I see it extending out from that source of from a progressive training source.
And that's where I was going to go with is that I don't see us being made for that. See, we were made for others. We were made to be in relationship with each other, to be there for each other, to serve each other, to connect. So if it was just about you and your own enlightenment, well, then you would just sit there all day. But I truly believe that life is about relationships and about being with others and going through the state, like you said, where you're at this maybe higher level of consciousness as you're going through life, but you're looking for ways to serve and to help others and be there for one another. And that goes to, we could talk about a little later, but team grit. Like I've been thinking about team grit versus individual grit. And you only have team grit if you have this connection and relationships. So as you become a person of a higher state of mind, you're able to not only walk your walk, but help others with their walk. And then we go through our dark times ourselves so that we can be a light for others. We go through our challenges. Because again, no one, if you go through a challenge on your own and it's just, you know, something you experience for yourself, but it doesn't become a lesson or a blessing for others, I believe it's wasted. It's almost like we go through the challenge. That's the journey of life to then become someone who can help others on their path. So to me, that's what it's all about. It's not about just being for yourself. It's about that higher level of knowing you're made for others and being there for others.
And is that coming from you from a more of a biological position or more of a spiritual theological position?
Well, this is something I've always felt even before I, you know, was on my walk spiritually. So this is something I've always felt inwardly. But if you just watch the way people interact and you watch when people are going through tough times and how people come out of the woodwork to lend a hand, you just see that. And Kerry Walsh Jennings said the other day, she said that greatness is never achieved in isolation. So I think at the core level, we know that we're always, you know, seeking opportunity to be with others. I mean, let's face it, we can watch movies on demand, but we still go to the movies. We still want to go to concerts and experience it with other people. We still love being part of a team. I was thinking about why coaches love coaching. Like, why do coaches love it? Because they are addicted to coaching. So many of them, you know, and I know, they love it. And it hit me because it fulfills all the requirements of focusing on a task, you know, strategy, you have to improve. There's some competition there as well, but yet you get to make people better. You get to make the players better. There's a lot of developing of others. There's a lot of relationship building. So I think when you can look at the microcosm of what a coach does, I think that actually goes to what makes a human being fully engaged.
Yeah. And teachers.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, and I'd say coach, teachers, mm-hmm. because why do they love to coach so much? And then when they're done, it's hard because now you get engaged life where every day you knew what you were doing when you showed up, you go into the building, I'm working on the game plan, I'm watching film, I'm coaching this player. If you're a teacher, I'm working on my lesson plan, I'm going to engage with my students. There's this great satisfaction of knowing that you're making a difference. And I think that's why so many teachers and coaches love to do it. It's why people actually coach when they're not getting paid. How many volunteer coaches are out there? There's so many, and they do it because it's intoxicating and it's engaging and it allows you to really get away from life and really just do something you love.
You know, what's cool is that my son is 8 years old. So he's just playing some basketball with his friends and doesn't really love basketball, but he came home the other day and he says, I think my wife asked something about like, how's it going for you? And he said, you know, you guys talk to me often about like, what is my thing? And we're going to find that one day. And he says, I'm pretty sure it's not basketball. So like, he's just out there because he loves his friends and he wants to play with his friends and, you know, whatever, it's fun, but it's not like the thing. Okay. And so, and he hasn't found his body yet. What I mean is like, he's still developing and he's like still figuring out how to, you know, move like an athlete, which by the way, is not important to me at all. I know that, you know, some people might think that, and not at all. Right. And so there's a moment where he grabbed a rebound and he shot the ball back up and it was close, but it didn't go in. And I looked, oh, and he doesn't get many of those opportunities. And I looked over at the two coaches and they both were like in, and these are both volunteer coaches. They're his friend's dads. And I'm on the sidelines. I'm just watching. And I look over and they both kind of got into like a three-quarter stance out of their seat because they were like, here's the moment. And the ball didn't go in for my son. And they looked at each other and they just had this little moment, the two coaches now, and they had this little moment and one slaps the other on the back, like, gosh, we're getting so close with them.
You know, that's great.
Isn't right, but that's what you just described to me, right? Is that, you know, it's to see somebody else grow and to have fun and joy and the excitement of taking a risk or whatever. And then the two coaches were bonding and they're like, God, and you could tell that that's why they're in it. So I think you're right, really onto something really, really special.
It's powerful. And you see the coaches that are doing it for the right reason, but it's such a fine line, right? Because the minute we get caught up in the results, the minute we get caught up in the pressure of the outside world and the expectations, we lose that inward joy and that passion that of what it's really all about. That's the hard part. Yet it's such a fine line. I find it as, you know, coaches will say, yeah, you know, I just got caught up in the moment. Parents, we do as well. I know I do.
Wait, whoa. That's a really important phrase. I got caught up in the moment. I know it's a colloquial saying. I've heard it all my life as well, but it's just striking me when you say that right now. What does that mean to you?
What it means to me is in that moment, that coach or myself, we're looking outside, not inside. Fear in that moment has settled in, and fear of not performing, of not succeeding, of what the world thinks, of the expectation.
Because you know what? That statement's wrong. If you get caught up in a moment, that means like the moment swept you up. Right. Okay. Yep. So that would mean that like a raindrop, you got sucked into the center of the raindrop and then you're inside the raindrop all the way till it reaches the ground. And then that moment, that raindrop is disrupted. So getting caught up in a moment is like a beautiful thing.
Right.
It's the accident that I'm trying to create more often in my life is to get caught in the moment, you know, because I can't will myself into it. I can prepare my mind to be there more often, but God, you know, I'm glad you said that moment in juxtaposition to this conversation, because I think that statement is fundamentally wrong.
I love that. But even when you're in the moment and caught up in the moment, right? I'm sure you've experienced something happened, an outside trigger that caused you to disrupt that moment and be outside that moment. Has that ever happened to you?
Oh, yeah. No, there's lots of more reasons that I get pulled out than I get pulled in. But being caught in a moment is something I love. And I hear people talk like saying that phrase, I got caught up in the moment. I think a better way of saying that is like, I missed the moment.
Yes. Yes.
Right? I was distracted by so many other things that I couldn't get swept in the moment.
Or I allowed something outside of me to ruin the moment that I was experiencing inside me.
Right. Okay. Yes. Thank you. Okay, good. Finding Mastery is brought to you by Apollo Neuro. By now, you're probably well aware that I am a huge fan of what they're doing. I love what they're building and how they're using science-backed technology to help people flourish. This is just a great technology that isn't measuring something, it's actually providing a state change for you to help you either downregulate, find a deeper sense of calm, maybe fall asleep a little bit easier. And if you want to be a bit more up and animated, they've got a way to help you do that as well. It's awesome. It works by sending silent, soothing vibrations. They call them Apollo vibes, of course, that's fun. And it's like music that you can just feel. Just like music, higher vibrations help improve your energy and focus, while lower vibrations, slower vibrations, help to reduce stress, help you relax. I use it twice a day. I use it after I do something really intense. So after it's a lift, after some fitness, after some sport, or after something I'm doing in the office. And I use it right before I go to bed. The science that they found is fascinating. Across various real world and clinical trials, Apollo wearable users experience up to 40% less stress and feelings of anxiety. That's an average, of course. 19% more time in deep sleep, 11% increase in HRV, heart rate variability, and up to 25% more focus and concentration. Those are radical. And because you're a part of the Finding Mastery community, you're going to get an exclusive, and I mean that word here, 15% off an Apollo wearable. So just head to apolloneuro.com/findingmastery and use the code FINDINGMASTERY at checkout. This is an exclusive offer only available to Finding Mastery. I love that we get to do this together. So be sure to use our code. Again, APOLLONEURO, apolloneuro.com/findingmastery, or use the code FINDINGMASTERY at checkout for 15% off your purchase. You're only getting that here. I really hope you'll check them out. Finding Mastery is brought to you by AquaTrue. We all know how important hydration is to performance and recovery and well-being, but it's not just about how much you drink. The quality of your water plays a big role. And if you're like me and you don't fully trust tap water, and I think for good reason, research by the Environmental Working Group has shown that 3 out of 4 homes in the U.S. have harmful contaminants in tap water. That's why I'm really excited to introduce AquaTrue. Their purifiers use a 4-stage reverse osmosis purification process, and their countertop purifiers remove 15 times more contaminants than ordinary pitcher filters. It's incredible. I can literally taste the difference in my water. Plus, the filters are affordable and long-lasting. Just one set of filters from their classic purifier makes the equivalent of 4,500 bottles of water. That adds up to less than 3 cents per bottle. It feels great to know that all at once, I'm saving money, getting the highest quality water for the Finding Mastery team, and helping make a positive impact on the environment by eliminating single-use plastics all the way around. AquaTrue comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee, and it even makes a great gift. And right now, because you're a Finding Mastery listener, you receive 20% off any AquaTrue purifier. So just go to AquaTrue.com. You spell it AquaTrue.com and enter the code Finding Mastery at checkout. Again, that's aquatrue.com. Enter the Finding Mastery code at checkout to receive 20% off any purifier that you buy there. John, connected, committed, and caring. Was there another C that we started off this conversation with?
Well, there's communication that helps create connection. So if you don't have great communication, then it's hard to have great connection. So most relationships break down because of poor communication and a lack of connection. And so one of the things that we can do, whether it's our marriage or whether it's a team or a coworker, is to enhance our communication to start to build the connection that we need. The way I look at it is like communication could often be surface level. So if you have communication, though, that helps lead to connection, that's where the power is. And then connection is where that bond that you're working on or that relationship you're building through communication, connection is where that bond is earned, where it grows deeper and more powerful.
Do you have one or two activities that people could do to increase one or all four of those core concepts that you're talking about?
I'm glad you asked because, yes, I mean, one of my favorites is the safe seat. Dabo Sweeney, 2 years ago with the team, he got a fishing stool from a friend of his, brought it back from a remote fishing village.
Explain who Davos is.
Dabo Sweeney is the head coach of Clemson University football. They had just won the national championship this past year. They went to the national championship last year against Alabama and lost, and then came back again this year and won it. So Dabo had a friend who brought this fishing stool to him, and it was the kind of stool that guys will sit around a circle at the fishing village and talk about life and family and relationships and you name it, and fishing, of course. And Dabo had an idea. He put the stool in the middle of the team meeting room, and every day a different guy would sit on the stool. And Dabo would ask that person questions. It was called a safe seat because it was a safe place to share, a safe place to be vulnerable. And whatever was shared was not to leave the room. And different guys got up there. And
this is in front of 100 other
peers. Yeah, another 100 teammates. And Dabo asked him questions about his life. Who's one of your heroes? Tell us about a hardship you faced. Tell us about one of your highlights. My favorite is this. Tell us about one of your defining moments in your life. When you know someone's defining moment, you get to know them a whole lot better and you know more of their story. Well, as each guy, one guy would sit in that chair after practice every day. And the team then got to ask some questions. And a lot of things came out. Some guys were brought to tears. But what happens is, and I've seen this happen over and over again because I've done this with a number of teams, is the vulnerability and the authenticity paves the way for meaningful relationships and strong connections. So the ego and the pride and the selfishness, the walls just come crumbling down. And then this vulnerability starts to pave the way for these human connections that I haven't found any way else to get to. So it's like, even when I'm on, your podcast, we talk and what you're so great at asking questions, I start to share and it becomes this deeper bond. Mm-hmm. You can't do it. Like you can't do it by trying to, let's go out in the wilderness and just try to, survive together. Let's go in the water. There's a lot of great programs that they do like that. And that helps create team bonding. But there's nothing more powerful to the human connection than being vulnerable and sharing. And it's amazing what happened. So that team really became closer and more connected in doing that kind of exercises. I worked with an executive team of a corporation and had an executive team do this, and real awkward at first. It's always a little awkward because it's tough to share. But once the exercise got going, man, it was powerful.
And how long would the person be in the chair for?
Not long. I mean, 5 minutes. I did it with a college golf team the other day. And again, it's funny because I wrote about it and I've had coaches do it, but I've never led it myself. So with this college golf team, I did it and wow, get an email from the coach a week later. I've never seen us more connected and more committed to each other. I've never had a locker room like this ever. And it's all because of what we did just with that one exercise.
It's amazing. And Coach Dabos would do this once a week?
Dabo did it after every practice. So after every practice during training camp, they would do this. I had Hank Jancic, the coach of Gettysburg, one of the top coaches in Division III. He did it every day as well. He just did the defining moment and just saw how powerful it was as each person shared their story and their challenges.
And then what about the contrarians in the room? What about the people who are like, oh my God, are we really doing this? Oh my God, this is so lame. What happens to that personality type or that lens?
Well, I thought a lot about this at the professional level. It's a little harder at the professional level because you have guys who have contracts, guys who are wanting new contracts. They don't want to share that they have a challenge. They don't want to be vulnerable, And in those cases, yes, you can not do it, but you won't be as close as you can be. You won't be as connected as you can be. You cannot do it, but it's a tool that you can use to create connection. I've never experienced anything more powerful, but there are still other ways you can do it to be more connected than you already are. But to the contrarians, I would say, you know what? You're going to spend time with each other. You are going to be on a bus. You are going to be on planes. You are going to be together as a team working day in and day out in an office. And if you don't really know each other, then what kind of existence is that? People say you shouldn't get personal in business. This doesn't mean you dump all your problems and know everybody's personal history, but it is helpful to know that person a little bit better. It is helpful to get an idea of who that person is and what their story is. And when you know them, guess what? The more connected you are to them, and when you know them and you know their story, you want to be there for them. You want to fight for them. You want to help that person. And when they're dealing with a challenge, you're actually more supportive. So again, the contrarians can say, I don't buy it. But those are the same people that say that love is a waste of time and has no place in business and sports. And all I heard Dabo Swinney say after the national championship was, we loved each other. And I told the guys all year that love was going to be the difference in this team.
Hmm. Brilliant. So thank you. When you, when we first started, I think it was before the microphones kicked on, you said that you might have some questions for me. I don't know if you have any more, but,
I do. Well, yeah. I do because, you know, this is something I'm always studying. I don't have all the answers. I'm working through it like anyone. I'm seeing what works. I'm seeing why some teams succeed, why teams don't. You know, when you get to work with a lot of college and sports teams and you go in and you speak, you're not with them all the time, but you talk with the coaches enough that you get a feel for, you know, what's going on. Here's one thing I do know, and then I want to ask you about this, but I know that it's never the talk. I know it's never the book they read. I always know it's not the motivational speech, right? It's always the leader and it's always the team. And it's always how the leader in that team interacts that year and the relationships that happen and the connections that happen. And it doesn't mean you're always going to win a championship, right? It doesn't mean that everything's going to go your way, because sometimes things just don't go your way no matter how connected you are, right? I spoke to the Dodgers last year, and Dave Roberts and I became close, and he really worked on building a connected team last year. Dave Roberts is the manager of the Los Angeles Dodgers, and he was named NL Manager of the Year last year. Well, they lost Clayton Kershaw. They had the most injuries ever in a single season, and most times on the DL. They had a lot of setbacks. They were below 500, but they stayed together. They stayed connected. And, you know, again, I follow this as I'm talking with Dave and following them along this path. And then you see that, you know, it's his leadership. It's how the team stayed connected. And that was the difference. Now, they didn't beat the Cubs, because I think the Cubs were connected. Also, I think the Cubs were just a team of destiny. I told Dave, no matter what, you can't beat God. Like, God wanted the Cubs to win. That was just, you couldn't do that. But, you know, sometimes that year, it just seems like the Patriots. It just seemed like they were meant to win this year. I don't know why, but it just seems that way. But you can always do your best every year to come together. So I guess my question for you, in terms of, you know, you work with a lot of teams. I know you can't really talk about specifically the teams you work with, but just from your observation on this, what are some ways that you've seen connection lead to commitment? And am I on track? Am I on the right track with connection and commitment? And what do we do with the contrarian guys who don't buy in? And I was actually going to ask you about the other side of the coin, where teams that have a lot of you know, they have a lot of dysfunction, and yet they still seem to win that year. How does that work?
Yeah, I think you're right on the money with connection and commitment. You know, I think that's right on the money. And helping people be more connected is a pursuit that is larger than the tactics of sport. You know, so for sure, I think you're on the money there. The second part of the question,
the contrarians and the teams that don't have great relationships, like you said, but yet they still win. What's happening there when they still win?
Oh, yeah.
What's the dynamic?
Well, you know, talent is, you know, I don't know. Talent does a lot. And when there's a freak on a team, and even if that freak is polarizing and whatever, but they show up on game day and it's a funny little thing that takes place. It's like Lord of the Flies, and everybody knows who has the power, and they look over at that person during crunch time and they're like, okay, well, he's going to get it through it, or he's going to get us through it, or she's going to get us through it. It's like when people are freak talents, and then the unit is not getting what they want, they know that that freak talent has the potential of being able just to put the game, literally the game, on their back and going for the win. And people default. Oftentimes people default to that. And so, is it a submissiveness? I don't know. I think it's almost maybe, but it's an acknowledgement that that person has the capacity to change the outcome. And so the outcome really does matter. And so I'm going to just submit to maybe my ethos, my character, my need to feel connected to get this immediate win right now, because that thing, you know, in the real world, that thing does matter. If I don't make the deadline, or if I don't make the budget number, if I don't make the wins, and my contract's on the line, and my family's, you know, well-being is on the line, or my ego's on the line, whatever is the strongest driver, that it becomes problematic. It's like this really interesting crisis for people.
Would you agree that I often say team beats talent when talent is in a team? Like, you have to have talent, a certain level, but we've seen so many teams with talent that aren't connected. And then you see a team that is connected, maybe not as much talent, but they win. Would you agree with that sentiment that team beats talent when talent isn't a team?
Yeah, I think that if you look at the extremes, yes, you know, yeah. But talent, there's something really potent about talent. And so if you had two really talented people that work together but don't like each other, and it's a team of five or even 11 on the field, they're probably going to win more often than we would anticipate. Like, even if they don't like each other, but they agree that while they're going to practice and while they're going to be on the field or hardwood or whatever, that they're going to work together, that stuff takes over. So I think, like, in the most beautiful sense, it's team and talent is what we're looking for.
Yeah.
And talent alone, meaning if there's only one person that's talented, it's tough. But if there's two that's talented and they just agree to work hard but don't have to like each other, then that there's something there that is, I think, really more common but less beautiful. And so I don't know. I think I'm still sussing it out, you know, for sure. But in an ideal world, we'd find the people that could jump out of the gym, run the fastest you can imagine, and want to be great human beings. Like, that's what we're looking for.
Yeah, right, right. And I love when you said about talent, because, you know, guys will push back. John, you're talking about this love. You're talking about, you know, relationships. But I always say, no, you do have to have talent, right? You do have to have people that can perform at a higher level. Because if you just have great relationships and a lot of love, but there's no talent, then, you know, you're going to be a very, very joyful team, maybe, but not a very successful team or a team that wins, right?
Yeah. There's something there, like, and especially in the pros, you know, it's much more magnified at that level.
Yeah, I actually coached a girls' basketball team my daughter was on, and we played against Christian Leitner's team that he was coaching. His daughter was on a team, and we dominated. But it wasn't my coaching. It was Sydney Searcy, who's now at Florida. And we had Sydney, and she was talented, and she just took over the game every play. And so that's why we won. So
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up, because what my frame of reference is with the pros – and I am not talking about kids. There should be nothing but fun. And exactly. I know that many of my friends or my son's parents and whatever in the communities around where I live, at 8, 9, 10, it's about winning. And it's wrong. It's fundamental. Yep. It's wrong. It's just, I mean, I can't be more clear about it. Yep. Get them moving. Get them reaching in every direction. Get them straining and striving. Get them laughing. Get them to feel all of their emotions that they possibly can, and being committed to themselves and others in the process. Like, it's a fantastic experience, literally, for the fundamentals. And it's not until like age 16 that we're starting to train them on how to compete. And it's like, you got to train to move. Fundamentals, train to move, train to compete. And then eventually, you know, we go on to train to win, but that takes time.
Yep. I'm going to write more on that, Mike, because, you know, there are things that I failed as a parent on where I was about the competition. And this new book that I have coming out, The Power of Positive Leadership, I actually talk about how my daughter almost quit lacrosse because I almost ruined it for her. But thankfully, I read a book by Joe Erman about Inside Out Coaching, about being a transformational coach, but I took it as being a transformational parent. And at that time, you know, ninth grade, my daughter was in ninth grade at that point, I started to just encourage her and be there for her rather than push her. And that made all the difference. Yeah. It really did. But I wish I can go back and do the younger years again, because, you know, I should have just been there for her all the time, loved her, not pushed her like I did. It's a regret I have in life. I'm glad I learned the lesson, but I'm glad you said that, because I want people to not do it the wrong way. And not make the mistake I made in that regard.
Yeah, no, for sure. That pain is real. And that's one of the things about the past is you can't go back and redo it, but you can learn. And but oftentimes that pain is still commingled there until there's full healing. And sometimes doing things differently in the future is part of that healing, if we're lucky enough to do it. But you know, that being said, the model to work from, I think it's a great model, long-term athletic development as a model. And literally it was, you know, some global research that took a look at the six stages for development, from fundamental movement skills all the way up to high performance. And so it's, you know, just get them moving, then fundamentals, then learning to train. And that's for boys, that's ages 9 to 12, just getting them learning to train, and then training to train. Like, so that's sports performance movement. is for young men from 12 to 16, and then training to compete, and then training to win, you know, post age 19. 19 and above is really about winning.
Wow.
Yeah.
Where can I find this that you just said those stages?
Long-term athletic development. Great model.
Okay. Yeah. One final question I have for you in terms of something I'm really fascinated with is team grit. I brought it up earlier. You know, we know that individual grit, I know you've interviewed Angela Duckworth and all the research on the number one predictor and factor of success is grit. So the ability to work hard for a long period of time towards a goal and to persevere, to overcome, you know, to keep moving forward in the face of adversity, failure, rejection, and obstacles. But I've been thinking about team grit, like what makes a team gritty? And I would just love your thoughts on what you've experienced and what you believe drives team grit.
Well, if grit has three components, passion, perseverance for long-term goals, grit would be the commitment, the shared commitment for the long-term goal, and to make sure that we teach the capabilities to be resilient. And so that's the perseverance part. So perseverance just means staying with it. And how do you stay with it? Well, it's easy to stay with it when it's easy. But then when it's difficult, that's what perseverance is really about. And so teaching the skills of resiliency is relatively mechanical. And it means as an organization to look toward challenges. So to look towards, not to look at them as threats, but look at opportunities ahead of us as great challenges to develop the skills, the inner skills that we need to be great as men and women. So that's the resiliency piece. And then the passion piece is making sure that the team is connected to, I know you love that word, but connected to each other, right? Yeah. So there's an inner fire, and then also connected to making sure that that inner fire is sustainable. So that's a connection to recovery. So I'd have a world-class recovery program, a world-class training of resiliency, and then making sure that the long-term vision is shared and equally bought into. And that's how you would train grit as a team.
I love that. Two things come to mind on that. When I was with the Dodgers, and Dave Roberts said I could share this, it's actually in a new book, but when I'm in his office a day before they clinched the postseason last year, one of his players walked in and he went over to him and gave him a big hug. And it was like a 5-second hug that a dad would give his long lost son. And then they talked for a little while and the player left. And I said, Dave, what's up with that? That's just awesome. Like, I love that you just did that. He goes, he comes in each day and I give him a hug. And, you know, he's like a member of my family. I hug him and we talk about life and it's just, you know, part of our relationship. And I watched him do that with, you know, a lot of different players, not the hug piece, but just, you know, connection. Well, that same player, several weeks later, I watched hit two big home runs to propel them to the next, you know, series. And I thought that is just incredible in terms of, you know, being a connected team. It starts at the top, but just watching that connection, it was like, I knew that I was, when I was in that moment watching it and then watch it from my house on the couch, I knew that I was being presented with both of these to be able to share this with coaches and people to talk about the importance of connection. So that was one thing that just came to mind when I saw that. And then the other was, and I'd love your thoughts on that, but the other one was working with a basketball team in college. They had grit written on the walls. It was their word that they were focusing on. But then I asked them, and part of my talk with them, how connected are you as a team? Just on a scale of 1 to 10, how connected do you think you are? And it's a really cool exercise to ask because, I mean, it's hard to quantify, but you just get a good sense. And they were like 2, 4, 6. And so here they were talking about grit, but they didn't have the connection that really drove grit. And they did underperform. I can't prove that one led to the other. But I have a good sense that their connection ultimately didn't have the connection that led to the commitment that would ultimately drive grit. So they lost a lot of close games. They just seemed to not be as together as they needed to be. And I sensed it when I was there as well. And I had an honest conversation with them about it and talked about it with them. And so, again, I think these are great learning experiences and learning opportunities for teams as they go forward and the importance of connection that drives team grit. What are your thoughts on that? Again, it's not a perfect science, but of what I just shared.
No, right on the money. And remember that many people think that grit is doing difficult work and being tough. And that's not it alone. You know, it's not enough.
Yeah.
And so, connection is, you know, it's, connection with yourself first is really important. And it's hard to be connected with other people consistently if you're not connected to yourself. And that's why we got to do the lonely work. You know,
I love that. I love that. You have to be connected with yourself first to be able to connect with others. Wow. Love that.
John, epic. I love connecting with you. Thank you for everything that you do and the way that you bring such fire into my life. And so it's fantastic to know you.
Thanks, Mike. It was awesome being with you and just love our conversations. Really appreciate you having me on again.
For sure. Now, where can people follow you and get your new book? And where are you in social media?
Sure. Just John Gordon 11, J-O-N Gordon 11. And the new book is The Power of Positive Leadership. And all my books can be found at johngordon.com, J-O-N Gordon.com. We just link to Amazon and the other bookstores.
My son and I read The Energy Bus, the kids' version of The Energy Bus, all the time.
Oh, that means so much. I really appreciate that. That just made my day.
Yeah,
thank you.
We love it. Yeah, we love reading it together. And awesome. So with that, thank you for just being a good spirit in the world and a friend. And for those still listening, thank you for being part of the community, the Finding Mastery community. It's beautiful to see how you guys are supporting and challenging each other on findingmastery.net/community. And John, thanks for being part of that as well. It's really fun to see you in there.
Thanks, Mike. Yeah, I love what you're doing. The work you're doing is important. It's just fun to – I listen to all the podcasts, so it's all the different people you have on. What a great growth opportunity. George Ravelin said to me the other day, and he's been on your podcast. George is, as you know, a very wise man. He said, we now have a library in our phone. To not learn is just no excuse. You have the ability to learn, and to have this kind of podcast and this kind of information available to you. Like, people ask me, what do I listen to? This is one of the top three that I listen to because it always allows me to learn and grow. So just keep up the amazing work.
Thank you. And I'll see you on social at Michael Gervais for Twitter and then at Finding Mastery on Instagram. John, let's do it again.
Okay, another year.
Okay, see you, brother. Take care. Okay. Bye.
Thanks, Mike. Thanks.
Bye. All right. Thank you so much for diving into another episode of Finding Mastery with us. Our team loves creating this podcast and sharing these conversations with you. We really appreciate you being part of this community. And if you're enjoying the show, the easiest no-cost way to support is to hit the subscribe or follow button wherever you're listening. Also, if you haven't already, please consider dropping us a review on Apple or Spotify. We are incredibly grateful for the support and feedback. If you're looking for even more insights, we have a newsletter we send out every Wednesday. Punch over to findingmastery.com/newsletter to sign up. This show wouldn't be possible without our sponsors, and we take our recommendations seriously. And the team is very thoughtful about making sure we love and endorse every product you hear on the show. If you want to check out any of our sponsor offers you heard about in this episode, you can find those deals at findingmastery.com/sponsors. And remember, no one does it alone. The door here at Finding Mastery is always open to those looking to explore the edges and the reaches of their potential so that they can help others do the same. So join our community, share your favorite episode with a friend, and let us know how we can continue to show up for you. Lastly, as a quick reminder, information in this podcast and from any material on the Finding Mastery website and social channels is for information purposes only. If you're looking for meaningful support, which we all need, one of the best things you can do is to talk to a licensed professional. So seek assistance from your healthcare providers. Again, a sincere thank you for listening. Until next episode, be well, think well, and keep exploring.